You boys for a party and didn't invite me.
Welcome to Fear Me.
Fear Me. You just see me.
Hi, I'm Kim.
Stuart.
Scott.
And Ross.
Yay, Ross is back.
We had to wake him.
Welcome back, Ross.
It's our eye in the sky,
happy
Ross.
Happy 4th of July, everybody.
Yeah, how about that?
Hey. Did everybody do fireworks?
We did.
Scott slept.
I did.
Probably.
I did.
We did Purple Rain, which Ross's wife gave to me. Did you do Purple Rain too, Ross?
We did, straight from the south of the border.
Is
that where you got it?
Yeah, sweet. Right off I-95, yep.
Nice!
Oh, yeah, we...
scared the crap out of the kids.
We stocked up.
South of the border. Pedro loves you.
Yeah, Lorena made a special trip to south of the border just for you.
That's right. Absolutely.
For our girls again.
Yeah, yeah. I got the play-by-play. Said, no, get those, don't get those, get these. Oh, the whole bit. It's awesome.
Nice, nice.
Wow. Yeah.
Lorena's got the inside scoop, huh?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're consumers of the pyrotechnics. We had a big time in the cul-de-sac last night. Yeah, it was good times.
And how many fingers did you guys blow off?
None, luckily.
Good.
Yeah, the kids.
Congratulations.
Banner year in the Ross house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We can't say so much for the kids, but Lorena and I did fine. Yeah, we were okay.
Oh, yeah. That's good. That's good.
Yeah, they don't matter.
It's always important.
Yeah, they're little fingers anyway, so.
Yeah, they bounce back quickly. They can still make the field goal sign with his fingers, right?
And Scott, you made it back to the States.
Yes, I did. I did. From green Ireland.
And how was it?
Oh, it's lovely. It was green. It was beer. And there was castles.
There was green beer.
And there was beer. And fish and chips and some beer.
St. Patrick's Day every day.
They drank beer. And they cooked with beer.
What?
Wow.
I tell you what, guys. My dream.
Yes.
It's reality.
But you guys didn't drink like whiskey or anything like that. Just beer.
No, we had a little whiskey.
Okay, good.
Jameson.
And more beer.
Well, yeah, of course, yeah.
Now, I fell in love with the beer over there. It was a Guinness brewed. It was called a Hop House 13 Lager.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's fantastic. And you didn't have to cut it with a knife.
That's why I don't like Guinness.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you would have liked this one. You would have liked this one. This is a crisp lager type beer. It was real.
Did you guys do any drinking contests?
Well, we tended, maybe unofficially.
Yeah, probably just our brothers getting together just tends to be a contest, doesn't it?
Oh, we bet on everything.
Yeah,
Matter of fact, we were watching the Euro soccer games, and everybody would pick the scores, you know, like 2-1 in regulation, 2-1 in overtime, you know, stuff like that. On all the games we could watch, nobody ever won.
Oh.
Oh, but
nobody,
you know what?
Picked
everybody,
the score correct.
Everybody won.
No, it was wonderful. It really did. I had a great time. Wish you guys had been there with us.
But, yeah, we do too. We were pretty jealous.
I'll bet. You should
but,
be.
Yeah, but we were busy. We had stuff to do.
We held down the fort while you were gone.
Yeah, we had a podcast to run here.
I don't give a rat's ass what you had.
Stuff.
Should have been there. We could have done the podcast over there. Live from Ireland. Oh, you're me brother.
Yeah, we should have. That would have been cool.
Yeah, you would never have done that. Yeah. The motivation probably wasn't there.
Oh, I would have done it.
Did you pick up any good lingo?
Well, I can tell you this. It's funny. Instead of fuck, they say feck.
Okay.
And the funny thing about
what
it
the
is...
feck?
what the feck? Ah, feck it. The funny part, though, is I think they're saying it to sound nicer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like it's a nice way to say.
When have the Irish been afraid of that?
I don't know. I mean, they do tend to fight. Then they realize they're fighting with a brother and make up over drinks.
Yeah.
Pubs were awesome. Crammed full of people watching soccer games. Very cool. But actually, I tell you what, the weather was fantastic. I mean, mainly sunny days over there. It was really cool. It was also weird, too, because some of the coast, when you looked at it, looked like you were in the Caribbean.
What? I mean, what do you mean?
Oh, yeah.
With ferns and palms all over the place. Oh. It's over the blue water. You didn't want to go into the water. Some idiots were surfing in the water.
Good Lord.
Cold as hell. But,
it'd freeze your balls off, man.
But if you weren't, you know, if you weren't expecting, you would have been like, damn, where the hell am I?
Well, we're glad to have you back, though.
No, yes, thanks. Indeed, Scott.
Yes, we are.
Thank you. I'm assuming you guys had a rockin' show last time.
It was.
I haven't had a chance to listen to yet.
It was. Yeah, really? I don't know if I'd say it was rockin'. It was damn good, though. But rockin' probably is not the term.
I think Ross did really well.
Thank you.
Really?
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that.
We had good discussion.
We had a great discussion, and I mean, how can you not? Preacher's been great.
Yeah, I agree. I tell you what, guys, I watched both episodes back to back, and which kind of screwed me up a little bit. I couldn't tell which one was the beginning of the second episode. I had to go back and watch it again, and I was a little jet lagged while watching it. But man, I had so many questions just on the damn first episode.
Yeah,
but,
right.
Yeah, great show. Kim? What you drinking?
Oh well, I am actually drinking. Well, you can't see me.
No, but you can tell our listeners what you're drinking.
I can't. I just picked up my beer though to show you, so that's why I was saying that. I am drinking one of my new favorites, which I've talked about before on the podcast, and that's Going Coastal by Sweetwater, the IPA with pineapple. Mm-hmm. It's just my favorite beer now.
Right. Very nice. Very nice.
And we got a bunch for 4th of July. So.
Very cool. I got a backup one sitting right in front of me myself.
Oh, of Going Coastal?
Uh-huh, but it's not nice. My first one.
Oh. Okay. What are you drinking?
I am drinking, it's called Resin from Six Point Brewery in Brooklyn. And it is about the hoppiest damn thing I've ever drank.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty wicked hot. Really high alcohol content, so if all of a sudden I just drift away or start gurgling my mouth,
we'll know why.
Just move on, folks. I wouldn't say it's great. It'll burn on the way down. Let me put it that way.
It's Scott just hit the table.
It's very, very.
You start sounding like Arseface anytime soon.
That's beautiful. Anyway, yeah, so I'm drinking Resin. Stu, what are you drinking?
What do you think?
Oh, God, seriously?
PBR, about 4th Stewart. Of July. Red, white, and blue.
Oh my God.
Just shoot me.
Ross, what do you got?
All right, I've got a delicious bottle of what we call around here Pilot Mountain Pale Ale.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
From Foothills Brewing Company out of Winston-Salem.
Nice.
It's good stuff.
Good. So another North Carolina beer. Cool.
Yep. Excellent. Yep. Keeping the state going.
Absolutely. One beer at a time.
Yep.
All right, so we are going to review Preacher Season 1, Episode 5, called Sundowner. So, did everybody figure out what Sundowner was? I hope you noticed it.
Yeah, I think so.
Because we were speculating last week what Sundowner could be, like if it was a name of an RV, or if it had something to do with Cassidy because he's a vampire. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Even this past week, I was thinking, maybe it's the name of a horse.
Yeah,
and then it's like so obvious at the start. You don't know what it was, Scott?
I do not. In all honesty, I didn't even think about the title of the show until just when you mentioned it, and I looked down. I'd have to think about it. What does it mean?
Sundowner Motel.
Oh, for God's sakes, sure.
Yeah, so when the crazy woman angel, the Texas cheerleading mom, yeah. when she went in the mm-hmm. truck and got the Bible out of the truck and opened mm-hmm. it up, it said Sundowner Motel.
Yeah, and so that transition when she looked at that and then all of a sudden, BAMS, Sundowner Motel was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
that was
so
great.
So did you guys like this episode?
I did. Yeah, I did. It seemed like it was... a little bit slower at parts. I know that
really?
We say that sometimes, but it did seem like this one was a little bit slower in parts.
Huh. I felt the exact opposite.
Probably. Well, I could see that, Brian, with like the stuff with Tulip and Emily.
Yes.
That slowed down a little bit. I'm not saying it wasn't a good part of the story, even though it did kind of go on a tangent I'm not really happy with. But yeah, that did drag at that point. What about you, Stuart? What did you think?
Well, the Eugene stuff, too, I think, added to that slowness, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was necessary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was. Necessary stuff, but just slow it down a little bit and give us some more, you know, right. more meat to the story. Yeah,
definitely. But, yeah, you can't beat that fight scene at the start was awesome.
No, that was
scene
the best.
Was incredible. Probably one of the best parts of the entire series.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yep.
I mean, that was so well played visually that and it was hilarious. I mean, it was so crazy. It was hilarious.
I love that we didn't really see what was going on, that we just saw it through that little hole in the wall.
Yeah.
So you just kind of had to use your imagination about what was going on.
Well,
and then all of a sudden you just see all these bodies piling up.
Well, yeah, you're backing away when they're backing away and you just hear, oh, she's got an axe or like little snippets of like things.
Grab
it was really well done. Yeah, it was very well done.
Yeah, that was cool. But even before you had that hole in the wall scene, just the whole fight scene with the Seraphim was just a riot.
Well,
because they all kept popping back up.
Oh, I know, and I love that they started out the episode with that, and then it carried over past the credits.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how long it took for this episode, for like what portion of that episode consisted of just the fight scene, but it felt like it took up quite a bit.
I would say probably, you know, maybe 15% of the episode was just that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, they started them out where they left off in the last one, which was...
right.
When they're, you know, they're back in the diner. So, like,
mm-hmm. right.
Scott, you said you watched both of them consecutively, which it would bleed right into the next one.
Right, and that's what threw me off a little bit, because I got to the end of the episode, and then I, you know, I went to pull up a recap so that we have some kind
of... And
then
you went and drank another resin.
Yeah, and then... So I'm reading the and I went, oh, that was the beginning of the episode.
Right.
So I went back and watched it again just so I could get that, get the sense of how the episode actually felt when it started. So, yeah,
What did you think, Kim? Did you get your 2 cents in there?
Oh, yeah, I loved it. I think this is probably one of my favorite episodes. They keep getting better and better. I think I say that every week.
Yeah.
But the fight scene was my favorite part about the whole thing. But...
Well, you didn't say it 2 weeks ago.
Did I? Oh, I said it was pretty slow that week, right?
No. No, you just
weren't there. Oh, I wasn't there. Yes.
That's right.
So there.
Well, I still like that episode, too.
Yeah, we had a lot of pauses during that episode, or that broadcast.
A lot of dead air.
What'd you think?
Crickets. No, but I really did like this.
That was a very thoughtful interview there with Kim.
But I also really like the Eugene parts of this episode.
Mm-hmm. Except I gotta say, why were the kids embracing him all of a sudden?
Don't get too much into it. I think we got a lot to discuss on that. Because I had the same feeling, Scott. I totally did, but I don't want to go into that too much because
really,
yeah. Well, because that ties all into the shocking ending of it too.
Well, let's just get into the episode.
All right, let's get into the episode.
Yeah, dealing with Fiori and
DeBlanc and Fiori.
Yep.
DeBlanc and Fiori, and the fact that they finally admit what is inside Jesse.
Yes.
Right.
Especially when Jesse orders them with the monster voice,
Tell me.
Right.
And they spit it out about
I was
Genesis.
Wondering if that was going to work on them.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, evidently.
But yeah, so he tells them that he has the spawn of a demon and an angel in him.
See, right. I told you they were angels.
A baby.
A baby.
A baby. Yeah, I love that. I loved his retort when he says, so it's like a demon angel baby. And he's like, if by baby you mean the most powerful entity ever known, the singular force that will shift the balance of power, threaten all of creation, well then, yeah, it's a baby.
Yeah.
And great. You know, most children are like that. They will want to. They will make you want to kill somebody.
That's
okay.
That's an interesting parallel.
Generally, they're more on the demon side.
They are.
Stuart, are you missing any children by chance? Have you counted?
Currently, they are all asleep. So yes, I'm missing all five of them, happily.
Wow. Let's hope, folks, children. That it's only a temporary situation that they've lost those children.
Yes.
Yeah. The phones are great. Calls are coming from inside the house.
So,
maybe for 2 days later, after I actually post this broadcast.
Do you think it's interesting that this thing's name is Genesis? The beginning?
Well, I don't know. I haven't really thought about that.
I love how they call out how kind of corny the name is for it.
Right. Yeah,
Cassidy called it out, didn't he? He's like, that's terrible.
Yeah, he
says, well, he stands back there and he goes, you mean the band? Oh, that's a terrible name.
And he said it a couple times, too.
Yeah. Like, I'm not calling it that.
The Genesis, and it got out of its coffee can domicile. And our boys,
the old timer.
The Blanc and Fiore want to get them back in the can.
But we never did find out how it got out, which I guess doesn't really matter, maybe.
Well, they didn't know, remember? They, you know, Jesse asked them, and they said, well, we're not sure. And then he asked them, well, why did it pick me? And they said, well, we're not sure of that either.
Oh, that's right. But didn't they also say, like, this is our first time? So what does that mean? This is their first time watching this thing?
No, I think it's the first time this thing's ever escaped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're custodians.
But what is, yeah, I mean, what's the book of Genesis in the Bible, though? It's the starting of the earth, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Starting of all life.
Starting of all life.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this thing evidently has the power to rival God.
Yep.
Well, it's good and evil, right? Isn't it, you know, I mean,
so it's the devil and God.
The foundation, yeah.
Which in itself is humanity or the earth.
Right.
So.
Oh, well, as they put it, they said management decided to keep it quiet.
Management. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah,
I thought, you know, it was a great scene when they take off after the blonde heading out, the soccer mom heading out to her car.
And I didn't catch it at first, but, you know, Fiore, the tall guy, yells, hey, you got a phone in there. And it's one of those God phones.
Oh, yeah.
That they have.
Oh, right.
And that's why they start kicking her ass.
I thought he just knew who she was when she walked in the room.
No. He pointed into the van and he goes, you got a phone in there. And then they started kicking her ass.
No, he was watching her the entire time in the restaurant.
Right. Yeah. He suspected.
Yeah,
right. He suspected.
Yeah.
I love that they picked a Texas soccer mom.
Yeah, exactly.
So unassuming. It was like perfect.
Seraphim or the soccerfin.
So do you guys know what seraphim is? I looked it up, actually.
Hit me.
It's an angelic being, makes sense, that belongs to the highest order of ninefold celestial hierarchy associated with light, ardor, and purity, and it's a guardian of heaven.
Right. Which I thought was really interesting because, you know, the dudes do explain to him that it is the highest order of angels and that it is, but they say almost in disgust, and they're all into order and peace. You know?
Yeah.
Which I was kind of like, so these guys are not for order and peace.
Well, these guys...
they're almost kind of jealous.
Yeah.
In a way, it sounded like.
These guys are Adelphi angels. They're like the bureaucrats,
lower caste. Yeah, lower caste.
Yeah. So to me, I keep bringing up St. Michael. They're still like St. Michael to me. They keep the order, right?
You're talking about the seraphim?
No. Fiore and... What's his
name? No, I think Michael's the defender of heaven. He's Action Jackson.
Yeah, he's like an archangel, right? Yeah. He's like these guys are a little more, I don't want to use the word bumbling, but they are in this instance, but they're angel
pencil pushers.
Yeah, they're the help.
You think so?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep.
Like in an Office Space type of movie, they would be like
the guy with the stapler.
Okay.
Yeah, my stapler.
Where's my stapler?
Where's my Genesis?
It's not in the can. Please put it back in the can.
Well, they almost seem like they're brand new to the job, like they don't really know what they're doing. Or maybe they were just being stupid one day.
Well, they were like,
let's see what happens.
Well, they're outside their element.
Yeah.
I mean, they're kind of clerical, and all of a sudden they're having to go out into the field, and they're not used to doing that. Now, they know that they can get it back into the can by singing the song. But let me ask you this. If you know that, then hadn't the thing gotten out of the can before?
Oh, good point.
Or it just enjoyed that song, and that's how they calmed it down when it was in the can.
Well, maybe. But okay.
Spent a lot of time in the can.
It is a can.
Yeah. I can picture the can sitting on a table and just like shaking back and forth when it's pissed off.
Yeah,
and then they sing to it, and it calms down.
Especially when you have like Michael Jackson on or something like that, starts dancing around.
Yeah. It gets excited.
Exactly what I was thinking.
It's a thriller.
Yeah, you stole my thunder, Scott.
Yeah. Oh, excellent.
What do you do when you put Michael Jackson on?
I dance.
It's kind of like
you got
these
to dance.
Guys. It's true, you do have to.
What were
like
they've
been
Big
given
Eye?
A responsibility, maybe, you know?
Yeah. Well, do you think they got it or they took it their own?
Well, yeah. I mean, they don't want it. They screwed up, and they don't want anybody else to know what they're doing, for one thing.
Absolutely.
And which is why when they were contemplating what to do in that last episode, when the phone was ringing the entire time.
Exactly.
And then once the phone stopped ringing, then it was like, okay, it's too late, because whoever was trying to contact them is on their way,
now,
which is...
Yeah, now knows we were not there.
Yeah, and that's where our Seraphim is coming about.
Is that what you were talking about, Brian?
Yeah, I'm sorry you guys were breaking up real bad. But what I was basically saying is it almost seemed like maybe they were given a new responsibility and they screwed up their first opportunity to kind of show that they can do the
prove
job.
Themselves.
And so now they're trying to cover, you know,
right. Ass. Yeah, they may be new to the job and screwed up on their first chance.
Sure.
Yeah, so apparently the Seraphim doesn't know about the Genesis either, though.
Mm-mm.
She's just there to get those guys back into heaven.
Well, she's there to find out why they're out.
Right.
Well, what was on the wanted poster?
Their pictures.
Their faces. Those guys.
Just the two of
them,
right?
Yeah.
Yep. Just the two of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a heavenly wanted poster.
Yeah, so she was carrying that in hunting those two down, not knowing what they had. Okay.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that. All
right. Right, because the guys were trying to make sure that it wasn't out of the bag. That was the whole idea of what they were doing.
But the next thing we learn is that they're not the only ones that, once you die, they just have a flash of light and come back into being.
Reinvigorating.
The same outfit.
Right. Evidently, all the angels do.
Right. So we learn that the only way to subdue either one of them is to actually restrain them and not kill them.
Or keep them alive, but cut them up.
Disarticulate.
which is what they did to the soccer mom.
Right. But not after many, many clones were killed.
Right.
Yeah, a pile.
Oh, God.
A pile.
Best fight scene ever.
Yeah, what a great scene.
Yes. Best fight scene I've seen in a long time. I mean, there was so much creativity in the visuals of that. It was incredible.
And how did Jesse not get hurt at all? These guys are, like, dying left and right. Jesse's still there. And then Cassidy comes in, and he's still fine. What's up
but
with
you know
that?
What? I mean, there's all those kinds of questions. How did no one else in the hotel hear about it?
Yeah.
How come the sheriff was there? But you know what?
Yeah.
I didn't care.
I didn't care.
I did not care. Yeah.
It was great.
It was a great
not
scene.
Until after it was all over, would I even thought of that?
Right. Yeah. And I even love the fact that, you know, that they're still standing in the parking lot covered in blood. You know? It's
right.
Like, you know, they're very casual about the whole thing afterwards. You know? And then Jesse whips out the monster voice and tells them to stay away from him.
Oh, yeah. Afterwards, right. What?
Yeah.
What did Cassidy say?
Cassidy started when Jesse whips out that monster voice and stops the angels in their tracks.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first time I saw Cassidy's face look like, oh, crap, there's something wrong here.
Uh-huh.
You know, because he looked at him real weird, like, that's not good. That you could order around angels. And, because, you know, he got into the other van, but you can see he was looking at Jesse like, something's not good here.
Oh, I know what it was. I'm thinking of when Cassidy first got there. He's like, what, you had a party without me?
That's right. He shoots an Ed and he's like, nobody's going to say thanks?
Yeah. Because at that point, they were trying to tie her up so that she wouldn't return again. But the other thing that we learned there that was interesting was that when they said they got killed, sometimes they, how do they call it? They rejuvenate, like, right nearby, and sometimes they don't know.
Yeah.
Right. I did think it was hilarious, though. I don't know if you guys noticed it, but as soon as, you know, Cassidy gets there and shoots her and, you know, starts talking about it, all of a sudden you see that light flash of her coming back. And you don't see it, but you hear Cassidy go, ah, oh, shite.
Yeah.
Even before they got to the Sundowner, when Jesse hustled them into the truck and got them to run there, and they're explaining all that stuff to him. And Jesse's listening to all this stuff, and he just goes, God damn, angels.
Yeah, that's right.
That was great. Great reaction.
Yeah, we don't talk so much about, like, his lines. He has some good one-liners.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He does. He had several in this episode.
But, you know, the big thing here is that Jesse finds out that what's inside of him is not God.
Yes.
So what's inside of him is not necessarily a good thing.
Well, he does, but, you know, I don't know if he believes that. Because, you know, he even said later on that this is God's will.
You know? Well, yeah, the important thing, I think, out of the entire thing was he said, if God wants it, then God can come and get it.
Right.
You know, I mean, because he thinks he can control it still, no matter if it's good or evil. I mean, it's giving him some power to do good. So he said, if it's that important to God, then send God down. Take it out of me.
I think that's why later on, though, he's having this struggle of between good and evil still. Like, he's had all the other episodes. But I think now it's becoming more apparent to him that maybe what he's doing is not on the up and up.
Right. I'll tell you one thing. I got one impression. What?
No, I was kidding. He didn't really have his mind changed by the end of the episode. That's for sure. He was.
No.
But there was doubt in his voice. There was a hitch in his step.
Yeah.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. There's definitely hesitation there. But the one thing I thought was kind of an interesting take I had on him. Over this whole episode is it seems to be the more Jesse becomes confident in his mission to save the town, the less he actually cares about the people.
What do you think he cares about?
His mission. His mission.
His mission
is to save the town.
Okay.
But his dealings on one-on-one with the people throughout the episode kept going downward.
Yes.
And look at how shitty he got with Eugene by the end of the episode.
Exactly.
You know,
but he was
basically saying, I'm the preacher.
And, well, look at how he treated Miles when Miles is having his conflict. Right. You know, he dealing with the people on the one-to-one basis, he wasn't very preacher-like.
No, that's a good point. He kind of left all that behind and like, listen, I got my thing I got to do. He has his mission and he's got to move forward with it.
But he's lost sight of what that mission means. Is helping the people. He just sees it as, I got to save this town as a, you know, to answer the promise he made to his dad.
He's looking at quantity, not quality.
Well, he is. I think
he's
looking
back to the quality.
I think he's looking less at saving people and more as getting out of it, getting out of the situation.
Yeah.
Out of what situation?
That's his out.
His promise to his dad
to save the town.
He did say that too, didn't he? That actually stuck out to me. He said that once this is done, then I'm free at one point.
And he was saying that to Cassidy, right? He said that to Cassidy.
Yep.
And that's when Cassidy was kind of like, you know, he said, ah, your mission. Yeah, I forgot about that. You know, like sarcastically saying, oh, yeah, your mission.
So he's trying to carry on the mission that his dad started.
Yeah, his dad told him to
be
one of the good guys.
Yeah.
You know. You know, and insinuating save my church, you know.
Right.
Did you notice, you know, when they were having that fight scene and they were waiting for the Seraphim to come back, the weapon that, you know, Jesse had a knife and Fury had I guess he had the chainsaw out or something like that. And DeBlanc had an iron.
Oh, that's right. Did he come out of the closet or something or the bathroom?
Yeah, and he had iron in his hand. That was pretty cool.
I think Jesse had like a vibrator at the start.
Yes.
Are you serious?
And they said, well, we weren't sure what to be prepared for.
Exactly. Oh, my God. Was that that long black thing that he had?
I think that's what it was. I don't... Yeah.
I thought that was a back massager.
Or it could have been a back massager.
I don't think so.
It was vibrating. God. Whatever it did.
Well, it was wiggling. Let's move on. Hey, one thing that was hilarious after the fight when they're all laying around there and Cassidy looks at Jesse and he goes, you know what this reminds me of? And Jesse goes, shut up, Cassidy. And he goes, fair enough.
Okay. Oh, Fjord says,
yes,
there's another option.
Right.
To get Genesis back in the can.
Well, that's true.
Right.
That seems pretty ominous.
Yeah, definitely, because DeBlanc just cuts him off immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does that all mean?
It'll be something we'll find out later on, I'm sure, because my guess is the singing's not going to work, and they're going to have to try something drastic.
Well, Jesse's not even going to give him the opportunity to do it, obviously. Right. I mean, he's done, which is why Fiore even brings it up.
It's a little shame, though. I would love to hear Blanc's magical voice again.
Didn't we hear him before sing this song?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. And it didn't work in the church.
Just before the chainsaw scene.
Oh, right. Now, I think Genesis is probably super excited that it's out and about and wrecking havoc, and it ain't going home anytime soon.
Well, we still haven't figured out, why the Genesis went from preacher to preacher killing them all until he got to Jesse.
Uh-huh.
So there's something there, something that made the Genesis want to stick with our boy. And I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that one, as we will also be hearing more about the other option for canning that sucker.
Right.
So the next scene we get is we get our friend Miles, the mayor, getting a call from the Green Acres folks about their missing CEO and so forth, who... in the last episode, hooked up with Otis Quinn Cannon about some kind of a merger, and he ended up blowing him away. Miles is kind of in the middle of a odd situation there. You guys have any clue as to why Otis blew them away?
Well,
I'm sure you talked about it in the last episode, but I wasn't privy to that, and totally bewildered.
I didn't see it more than them just being a threat.
Yeah, I mean, because we talked about him, he's doing God's bidding, right? God's work.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
But we talked about last week about what God would want you to kill somebody. So who does he think is God? Is it himself?
Right. And I think that's the most important part about why he did it, is that he has this crazy, vision of what God is. To him, is it business? Is it his company?
Yeah, or maybe, my initial reaction when I started actually thinking about it a little bit was that maybe he considered the Green Acres people to be serving the other side, or that their motivations are not for the good of the people.
Like they'd be evil?
Yeah. And because they were like, maybe he thought because they were that he feels like they were trying to take over or something, that they were evil. So he was ridding the community of them. I don't know. We'll find out. But
that
definitely caught me by surprise.
There. Oh, yeah. But now, the interesting thing is that Miles is the one that's having to answer for this. The Green Acres people are calling him. Right. They had contacted him initially. He was handing the brochure over to Odin,
he was the broker.
Peed on it. Yeah.
Right. He was the broker of the whole thing.
So they're calling him, asking where are the people,
right?
Where they're going to meet Odin. Like, so they should be calling Odin.
Right. So the scene, in essence, threw out to us that there is Miles' dilemma right now. And his dilemma is to figure out how to react to what Otis Quinn Cannon did.
Odin.
Yes.
Otis.
I like Otis, actually. Ah, resin. What a good beer.
Andy Griffith. That's
so, right. As we leave that quick...
Yeah, that was exactly what I was thinking.
As we leave that really quick scene, we go on to the confrontation between Tulip and Emily, where Tulip shows up at Emily's house.
Which, again, was shocking starting out. Because Tulip comes running in.
Yeah. Trashes her daughter's art thing.
That's exactly what I would do, because I would be like so flustered. Like, God damn it.
Right.
Yeah. And because you don't know what the hell your kid made.
I know.
Yeah, what
it's a blob. It tells her to stay away from my boyfriend.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
But Emily's probably like, what the hell, man? Like, I haven't done anything.
Right.
And
Emily stood up to her.
Where do you get off doing this?
Right. So we have a tricky, convoluted bonding moment between the ladies.
Uh-huh. Well, I thought it was interesting that Tulip decided to go back in. Good for her. And I think she's struggling with that idea that Jesse presented to her that they should be good. And that's what she's trying to do. And, but it just doesn't work for her.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I don't think she knows how to be good.
She's definitely struggling with it, no doubt. This is one area, though, where I probably wasn't as happy with the way the story was going. The one thing I liked about Tulip was that she was confident and mysterious and badass.
Uh-huh.
This kind of makes her out as being kind of wishy-washy and not so confident. And I don't know, the whole boyfriend-girlfriend thing. Originally she seemed like she would be above that to an extent.
Yeah, but I think it brings her back home because there are a lot of confident women out there who on the inside are just destroyed. And I think that brings her back to reality to a lot of people, you know? Makes her real to us.
Well, I think
showcases the struggle. Yeah, showcases the struggle that she's dealing with internally.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think she's still confident. I don't think she loses any real confidence in this. I mean, she's kind of stuck where she is trying to get Jesse back. But she's still the same person she was before.
See, I disagree.
I agree a little bit in what you're saying, in the fact that before she didn't need anybody, right?
Right.
And now she needs Jesse. So, yeah, that weakens her character a little bit. But I think overall she's just as confident as she was before.
But why does that make her look weak? Why is it that when a strong woman wants a man, that makes her look weak?
Mm-hmm. No, what I mean by that is, see,
anybody else makes them look weak.
I disagree with you in that she's still confident. I mean, I really do, because she's, you know, her situations with Jesse and so forth has thrown her confidence off. I mean, this is not the same girl that made a bazooka out of cans and blew a helicopter out of the air.
That's what I was going to say. She says it to those kids in the kitchen the very first episode, right?
Yeah, she was incredibly confident and badass and didn't need anybody. She was doing it on her own. Now she's showing a lot of vulnerability and doubt in her direction she was going in. I mean, the way she's looking at Emily.
Only because she has to, I think, though, in order to play. She's playing the game.
Right, but that's my point. I think it's taking away from her character to me.
But I think in that first episode when she was talking to the kids, she was still confident in the fact that Jesse would do whatever she wanted to do. And now he's standing up for himself. And without him relying on her, she's less confident in herself now. And she needs that affirmation that she's doing something right in order to feel good about herself.
Right. I also don't care for, I'm not real thrilled on the direction of the love triangle type stuff going on.
Everybody's confused as to who they love here.
Right. I mean, you got Cassidy to Tulip, you got Tulip to Jesse.
Yeah, you got Miles loves Emily, Emily loves Jesse, Jesse loves God.
Yep.
And you got Cassidy loving Tulip and Tulip loving Jesse. Yeah, I mean, it's all over the place.
And so, I think you can stick a big yada, yada, yada at the end of that one.
I mean, the whole point is that it's so ridiculous. To me, it's funny in that way because it's ridiculous that everybody loves somebody else.
I just hope it doesn't become the focus of the show.
I don't think it will at all.
I think it's still going to be a secondary story. But I do think it's funny that Tulip notices that Emily loves or is interested in Jesse, and Jesse still hasn't noticed it yet.
It's right. just, I think it's more of like a moment of frustration for the audience of like, you know, when the lines come out, it's like, oh, he doesn't see it. But then it's kind of like, oh, of course he doesn't see it.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, he totally dissed Emily at the end about her setting up the church.
Oh, so yeah.
You and Tulip did a great job.
Yep. Now, let me ask you this. She bit him right back when she sent Eugene in.
Yes, exactly. But let me ask you this. Do you, this was one thing I wasn't sure about, and it's an interesting question. When Tulip became involved in helping out with the church stuff, then Jesse noticed it, right? Do you think that that was Tulip's intention from the beginning, or do you think that that just was a unfortunate accident?
Oh no!
For Emily, her intention from going over and talking to Emily.
Yeah, or getting involved was to impress Jesse.
I think getting involved was definitely to get into Jesse, because she knows that he's totally into the church now, and the only way she can get into his mind is to somehow be involved with the church.
But do you think...
Well, not even be involved with the church, but like... Mm-hmm.
Just impress.
I don't know, weasel her way in. Yeah.
Right. But do you think that she was... Do you think she was manipulating Emily to that end?
Yes.
I think she was after the fight happened. I think the starting of the fight, she was over there to bitch at Emily for messing with her game and messing with her man.
Yep.
And then sitting in the car, she realized, all right, I just fucked up. And this was a new reasoning for her.
Well, then that would insinuate that when she was offering to take care of the kids, that she knew that wasn't going to happen. And that she would be asked to do the errand stuff.
Well,
taking care of the kids wouldn't have impressed Jesse at all.
No, it might not have, but it would be seen as a sacrifice.
If he ever heard about it.
Right. But I'm sure that Emily would have said something.
I don't know. But
well, I kind of get it what you're saying. I mean, in a way, she was... Yeah, I think that Tulip she knew beforehand that offering that Emily wouldn't go for that.
Yeah, that would be shot down. She's not going to leave her with her kids.
Right.
Right. So that she would get the opportunity to take care of other church stuff.
Although the interesting thing was that she said she had a kid before, which was something that we didn't know.
Right.
So, right.
Exactly.
Is that Jesse's kid?
Yeah, was it Jesse's kid and what happened?
See, and that's why it leads me to think that it was not planned. It was just an unfortunate accident for Emily in the way it happened, because there was too much to manipulate in that conversation to engineer that, in my opinion. But at first I thought that, and then I thought back, I was like, man, you gotta
yeah, whatever, man, you brought it up, dude.
Well, that's why I was asking you.
No, I mean, I really don't think that, I don't think she went in there with the intention of this happening. Because she was definitely pissed off. And there was no way for her to know that Emily's daughter was sick. So right. I think she, out of the goodness of her art, in quotes, offered to watch the kid because that was like the most obvious solution. And then once Emily showed doubt, she was like, or I could run the errands for you. And then that's when it clicked, like, okay, now I can actually do stuff for the church and get there and see Jesse and talk to him. That's what I think.
In other words, it wasn't totally premeditated. It just worked out in her favor to get into the church.
And, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly that, you know, that is definitely a way you could take that. what?
That's one way you could take it, but that's not the way I take it.
I don't know. I mean, I can't decide, to tell you the truth. I can't decide if it was just an accidental thing.
Well, you got to remember that she's a con artist, right?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. That's why I first assumed that's what it was.
She sees an opportunity and she's taking it.
She's used to rolling with the punches.
Yep.
I think she's really, it just worked out that way, but she went in there to make waves with Emily.
Totally.
Yep. Because she doesn't have a crystal ball. She's not going to know all the way. I don't think there was any way for her to know that it was going to work out that way. And she's going to wind up at the church within 30 minutes or something like that.
But, right. Right.
You know, it was really just to make an impact with Emily.
And the one thing that
from there.
Emily has the guts to come out and bitch at her about is the fact that she broke her kid's art thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, she had the guts to stand up to her, period.
Right. So she came out and she's like, all right, well, if that's what if that's what affected you the most, she goes in and fixes the art thing. She's got control.
Right.
Right.
So.
Right. Good point. Yeah. She's in there. She's working her in her corner, you know?
I think Emily started, was the one who really started like complimenting her car and stuff like that. I don't think she was thinking that was going to happen.
Yeah. You don't think Tulip thought
that was going to happen? Is that what you mean?
No. Yeah, I didn't. I mean, I didn't. I don't think Tulip would have thought, yeah, oh, yeah, you know, I'll get her talking about me or something like that.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying, that she saw an opportunity when Emily sat down and started doing, folding the programs for the church and started talking about all the stuff she had to do. That's when, like, the light bulb went off and she's like, ah. But up until then, I don't think she thought anything other than fixing the wrong that she had just made. Emily has what's the kind of word I'm looking for? Like, you know, she's better. She has a better heart than Tulip.
Adjective?
Does. Yes, the adjective.
Yeah.
What adjective? Adverb?
Adverb.
I would like to move on and talk about two guys in their underwear, obviously.
Oh, yes. Let's
obviously. Obviously.
Because there was some junk.
Obviously. Stuart, we're finally getting to the part you've been waiting for.
I know. Jeez, you guys have been
We go to
me.
The session of men in skivvies.
Dun, 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 dun. Men in tights.
So we're getting our post battle Jesse and Cassidy at the church, right? Cleaning all the blood off of their clothes, so they're staying around in their underwear. And by the way, I love the little thing that they did with when someone would offer him a beer, and they go, it's 10 o'clock.
Tulip did that. Because I was like, I was thinking Tulip, and because the two that got offered, Tulip and Cassidy, I didn't think would have any objection to it.
I know, that's what made it funny. They're like, well, I mean, that's what made it hilarious. Oh, I just loved I loved Emily's face when Tulip went, you know, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. She's looking at her like, yeah, okay. And then, you know, and then, but Jesse laughs at Cassidy when he says that. but I just thought that was a great little touch.
Yeah, it was.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
So they're sharing a beer and they're talking about...
Cassidy's talking about how it reminds him of what movie?
Oh, Pulp Fiction.
Yes. He's like, this is like Pulp Fiction. And they start telling him, saying which characters they would be.
Who was Vinny? Which one was that? Cassidy was Vinny?
No. Jesse said he was Vinny.
Okay.
Cassidy said he was Samuel L. Jackson.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, right. Yep. Yep. But that's when they really start talking about, though, Jesse's motivation for doing all this stuff. Because, you know, they're talking about this, because even at the point when Jesse starts talking about, well, I'm here to save the town, and Cassidy's kind of like, oh, yeah, your mission thing, that's right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You know,
almost kind of making fun of him for it, you know, like Cassidy does. Cassidy restates the obvious things at you. Cassidy's definitely having some real doubts about what's going on with Jesse right now.
Which is weird, don't you think? As a vampire?
In a way, but I mean, he's been dealing with these angel guys longer than Jesse has.
And he's experienced Jesse's monster voice.
Right.
I know, but he's a vampire.
Well, he brings it up during the conversation. Aren't you overstepping your bounds? He's like, aren't you supposed to listen to these guys because they're the angels? You know?
Remember, he may be a vampire, but he's still just a guy.
Yeah.
Talking to a girl, asking him to love her. No, I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
Wrong movie.
Tangent.
Well, it's just like the angels are even the angels are kind of simpletons even too, right?
Yeah,
you right. Figure, well, they're angels, aren't they supposed to know more than they know? And they don't.
It sounds like heaven's not real well managed.
I know.
Yeah,
but but anyway, that was a great scene between those two guys. The dialogue was great, and we started establishing something between the two of them.
I like that they started out, too, with just, like, random chit-chat, and Jesse's like, so what you been doing?
Right. And he's like, oh, going like, around town,
fell in love,
into trouble.
Went to the hospital.
That's right. Fell out of a building.
Nothing to concern yourself with. Yeah, but then they start talking about the tattoo, which I think is important, because Jesse's got that tattoo, which I think in an earlier podcast, Kim said was a turtle. Kind of looks like a turtle.
Obviously no, it's a skull. Not a turtle now.
No, skull and something. I can't.
It's
I don't
a.
Know
what, it's like a star. Like a star. Yeah, it's a star. It looks like a sheriff's badge, and it has a horseshoe, and then it has the skull.
Right. Right. Yeah, so, that's right. The horseshoe was there too.
And then he said that. What did he say?
A mean old lady gave it to me.
Mean old lady gave it to me.
Who's the mean old lady?
I don't know. That's what we get to find out. That's definitely leading to something. It's definitely leading
somebody
to somebody
from his past.
You think?
You're a funny, funny guy, Brian.
I'm on fire, man. I'm on fire.
You're on fuego.
In fuego.
But I also like how Jesse says, well, what about you? You look like a men's room wall.
Oh, that's right.
That he says, one. I went through a period of low impulse control. Thank now, God that's over.
One thing I did notice when I went back and watched that scene, when Jesse mentions that a mean old lady gave me the tattoo, you know?
Yeah.
He looks really nervous when he said that.
Uh-huh.
Very uncomfortable. So
yeah, he dropped it real quick.
Yeah, so I have a feeling that's going to come into play at some point in the future. That was actually an important statement to what he's going to be going through. But we'll see. Hey, let me ask you this. I think at this point they show the scene with Jesse walking up to the church. And did you notice what the church sign said this episode?
Yes. It said, hold on, I have it written down. Oh, you don't have to leave, but you can't pray here? Is that what it
said? Yeah, you don't have to go home, but you can't pray here.
Yeah.
That was great. did they have one in the last episode? I missed it.
No.
I love those church signs.
And you know that's based off The Simpsons, right? Have we talked about that?
No.
Yeah, not. They actually...
Yeah, Reverend Lovejoy's marquee.
Yeah, yeah, they actually stole some. That from The Simpsons, because one of the producers, not Seth Rogen, but... Oh, Evan Goldberg?
Goldberg, right?
Maybe.
Yeah, he's involved with The Simpsons, right?
Yeah, he wrote an episode or two for The Simpsons, so he felt like he could just steal it.
Hmm.
So he did.
So that was something that happened at the churches on The Simpsons?
Well, you know how in the opening credits of The Simpsons, they change the sign for the school every time?
No, so, I don't know that.
Oh, okay. No. Well, you should watch The Simpsons again, Scott. It's been on for like 30 years.
And also
not only that. But
again? You're saying again? Maybe the first time.
Oh, my God.
Scott doesn't do cartoons. Sorry.
But they're adult cartoons.
It's the longest running sitcom in history.
Seriously.
Ever.
Scott doesn't do cartoons.
Okay, you used to say Scott doesn't do Seinfeld. Now look at you.
No. No.
Yeah. So
now it's the summer of George.
I'm thinking. I'm thinking.
I want to have some block of cheese and be a sconced in velvet.
What about the fact that Cassidy brings up to Jesse that he doesn't think he should be screwing around with this entity thing?
Yeah.
Don't you think we should talk about that?
I think we should.
I think we should too. And I think that we'll break that out when we come back from our break. We're taking a break, everybody. We'll be back in a minute. Bye. All right, everybody, we're back. Kim wants to talk about the entity. And you know what?
Way to bring
it back. We're going to do that just right now. Kim,
so,
what was your thinking on the entity?
Yeah, what was on your mind?
That's just silly, you guys.
Mm-mm.
No, I was just saying that Cassidy says something to Jesse about the thing that's inside of him and says, like, you know, I'm not so sure that you should be screwing around with this thing. Like, you should probably be on the up and up. And Jesse's like, feck it. Whatever.
Yeah.
It's mine.
Yeah.
I'm going to do with it what I want.
Right. Which is his exact reaction to Fiori and DeBlanc, too.
Yep.
It's like, this is, you know, come on. You know, if you have a problem with what I'm doing, God, this is God's will. And let God stop me. because no one else is going to stop me. And everybody around him is completely shocked because they're like, oh, well, I mean, we just told you, God, you know, this is a bad thing and you should give it up. And no one expects him to say no.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it kind of sets the scene for what happens later on with Eugene.
Right, right. No doubt. But I also think you got to remember that Cassidy's 119 years old. He's seen a lot.
Right.
And and he's looking at Jesse and he sees something bad. He, you know, and he considers Jesse his friend, so he's not comfortable with the way Jesse's going with his power. And he sees the thing that kind of what we were talking about before. Jesse is so obsessed with his mission that he's losing sight of what he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Well, and it's something that you had posed before, Scott, that maybe, you know, it's controlling him a little bit more. You know, maybe it's not him, maybe it's not the entity, but maybe it's just the power, you know, the power thing that's controlling him a little bit more.
Going to Jesse's head, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, I think the thing that's really holding me back with this whole Cassidy as a vampire thing is the fact that our traditional idea of what a vampire is not Cassidy.
Cassidy's a guy.
He's just a guy. You're right. Like, the fact that he's a vampire is, like, non-existent, pretty much.
He's a roguish guy. He's got a ton of experience. He's I think, in most of his life, he's probably been incredibly self-centered. But he sees a friend in Jesse, and he's seeing things go bad for his friend. And then, of course, we're going to be dealing with the fact that his feelings for Tulip could drive a stake in between those a stake.
Oh, hey.
Nice. Thank you. I'll be here all the week.
Zing!
But it's going to drive a little, could drive a little stake between their friendship.
Uh-huh.
And that's the first time we've seen Cassidy kind of being a little vulnerable.
Well, yeah, and that was, to me, that was weird. And you're talking about when he's in the closet there.
Yes.
And Tulip comes in to deliver the church stuff,
mm-hmm.
and hears Jesse call her Tulip, which I guess during this entire time they had not shared each other's names.
Even though they had sex?
They just screwed, but they didn't share names.
Yeah. Well, you know how it is.
That's what I do.
All right.
Ooh.
No, we're not going to get there. But he says, so you're his Tulip. Which was the Tulip tattoo.
Yeah. Wow, there's some dead space there.
Because, you know, you don't want them coming back.
You dropped the bomb on me, baby.
Baby.
That was awesome.
Yeah, it's hard to take him seriously, right? It kind of almost seems to me like Cassidy is like, it's like this is an act. Almost, mm-hmm. Because it's these type of things should be far beyond a vampire's normal affairs.
Very true.
Or cares
true.
For that world.
And he gives you the air of someone who shouldn't care.
Yeah, but I mean, at that point, he's in the closet. Like, who's he even acting to? You know what I mean? It was weird because it seemed like he was hurt.
Yeah, it was genuine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely a genuine reaction from him.
So it was extremely surprising to see that it was like an actual thing. Because we were speculating before when he was having sex with Tulip before that, I mean, you know, he didn't care. He was just doing it with whatever he could get, just like he was doing whatever drugs he could get.
Right. And I think he knew, you know, I think he was down because he knew he couldn't compete with Jesse with Tulip. And, you know, he just didn't realize that that was the case until then. So he's kind of in a tough spot. We'll just have to see how it carries out.
But what will be interesting is to see how affected Jesse really is by the idea that Cassidy could possibly be in love with Tulip when he is so focused on his mission right now that everything that Tulip says he's brushing away.
Oh, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
He's got super blinders on right now.
Right. I mean, so how is he going
to... anything to the left or to the right.
Is it really going to matter to him? I'm sure it will, but like
no,
to what
it's
extent?
No, more about how it matters to Cassidy.
Yeah.
But when Jesse finds out, do you think he's going to be upset about it?
No.
Nope.
No, no, I don't. Because Jesse doesn't really have affections to Tulip right now. Uh-huh. He would. I'm sure his reaction would be, "Well, go for it."
Well, he keeps telling her, "Just go, do whatever you need to do." Yeah. She, the only reason she's there is that she's waiting for him, and he's like has no idea. I mean, he doesn't really care that she's waiting. But speaking,
I guess we established that last episode.
Speaking of depressing moments, though, don't we then find Eugene in the cafeteria, sitting down at his
At school,
his assigned lunch seat, with the "Suck it, Eugene" written on written on his table.
That was wrong,
poor Eugene. I feel so bad for him.
I tell you what,
your back.
I don't know if I just like enjoy bullying, but that was perfect.
Really?
Yeah, it was. But I tell you what, I gotta say this. I gotta say this for the actor, Coletti, I think is his name.
Yeah, Ian Coletti.
Ian Coletti. Man, that guy does more with his eyes.
Yes.
Than anybody. I mean, man, he just gives you all his emotion is in his eyes.
He can't do much with his mouth.
No, he can't.
Well, that's what
but he does a great job.
That's what they were talking about on the Insider podcast, the official AMC podcast. They were talking about how they created that prosthetic to just cover his mouth, that originally it was supposed to be for the whole face, because he was supposed to have red eyes too, I think, because the character in the comic book does. But they decided to just cover his mouth so that he could use his eyes to express himself, because, you know, that's one of the main ways that an actor... you know, conveys what they're feeling. And it's hard for him to do that with his mouth, that prosthetic.
Right.
So
can you imagine?
Yeah, like, you can't even eat with that thing on.
Like, after they were like cut, I'd be like, did I get it? did you get that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you know what? If you need someone to siphon gas, that's your guy.
Oh.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Oh, God.
He's a little puckered about things.
I could say some things, but I won't.
Exactly.
Way to drain the pool after the summer.
It was okay except for the flies. Yeah, so we have our friend Eugene. First we see him in the hallway with someone saying hello to him, that same kid. He's kind of freaked out about it, and then the kid introduces himself, says, "Can we sit with you in the cafeteria?" Now, let me put it this way: that kid, whoever he was, made overtures to Eugene to hang out with him. The other two kids looked really uncomfortable about it.
Yeah,
they weren't too sure. They don't want to eat with this. Yeah, it's like kind of, we sure we want to do this kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Right.
We're gonna eat with this guy.
And then of course we have the whole scene with them going into, they're inviting him out to go see this thing, and we feel that there's going to be like a ambush or something on him in the sewer tunnel.
During that entire time, like, didn't you feel like it was complete setup?
Yeah, totally.
Without a doubt. Without
bad intentions all around.
Right. And then it doesn't turn out to be that way. They wanted to see the fireworks they were doing inside the sewer tunnel.
Even after the fireworks went off, I was like, they're still setting him up.
This is
the early stage.
Yes.
Like, they're getting, you know, making him feel comfortable.
Yeah, you have
the next episode. They're going to set. But truly, I think what they're trying to get across was that he, because he was forgiven, that he was, you know, that the people were trying to bring him back into, you know, the fold.
Right. Who's that kid? Who's that kid?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know. I hadn't seen
him before. Could he be, Did the girl that's in coma, did she have a brother?
Yes, the one that was taking pictures of her.
Well, that wasn't that kid, though.
Wasn't the same kid.
No.
I don't think so. I think he had brown hair.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a different kid.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I was wondering if that maybe was his motivation.
I don't know if we've seen this kid before.
Maybe not. I didn't understand where he was coming from, tell you the truth.
I don't know.
Why he would always, or all of a sudden, it was just this guy trying to... strike up something with Eugene. It wasn't like the whole gang was.
No.
Right.
I think it's interesting that he would eat at the same lunch table that someone wrote "Suck it, Eugene" every day.
Maybe he wrote it originally and felt bad about it.
Yeah. Right.
Sorry, Ross, you were saying something.
No, I was just going to say, it seems like, you know, it's one of those kids that, you know, he's, you know, he's got the influence. He's the leader of their group.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they're all looking to him. Everybody's just looking up to, you know, follow his lead.
Yeah, and he took notice.
And I agree with you.
They didn't look like they were the winners either of the school popularity group.
I don't know.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, how old are those kids? They're
like
what,
15, something.
Early teens, 14, 15 tops, maybe, whatever.
Eugene's like 23.
Yeah, he looks so much older.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But they all were on still on bikes, so they were probably 15.
Yeah. And they're still doing cool shit. I mean, they're lighting fireworks off in tunnels and stuff like that. You know,
God, I still do that shit. That's awesome.
Yeah. You know, they're not sitting there and seeing who can get the highest score on the computer game after school, you know, that kind of shit. So,
yeah. Is that what you got the fireworks for?
And it's the cool factor, Scott.
It is. I understand. And
Toby's like, Scott, why are we going to the sewer again?
Yeah. Just be quiet. Don't ask questions.
Just move on.
This is what the cool kids are doing. Scott, you're 50.
Oh. That's... Oh, I am. Never mind. You're right. Sorry. All right. So, that being said, then we run into our scene with Jesse. And Jesse is setting up for the outdoor session he's going to have, the outdoor preaching.
Yes.
And, you know, we kind of skipped over the whole...
They call it a sermon.
It's spillover.
Yes, thank you.
The outdoor session.
Yeah, the outdoor recession. But, you know, we kind of skipped over the fact that Jesse was so confident he was putting up that huge speaker
on
the front of the church, and even Cassidy was kind of like, you sure you want to do that? But Miles comes to him while he's setting him up, because Miles is dealing with that whole dilemma about what to do about the Green Acres folks that Quinn Cannon blew away.
Well, yeah, and Jesse's just telling him, go with, you know, what your heart tells you, or what, right, you know, what God is telling you to do. And he was saying how he's confused about what voice is, you know, is the good voice, because he's getting
conflicting.
Well,
he's saying, I'm
going to
do something
bad.
Right. He says, I'm going to do something bad.
Right.
Or I think I'm going to do something bad, and I want to know if I should do it or not. And Jesse's kind of like, well, I guess. You got to give me some information, though, you know.
Yep.
That's kind of, and I got the sense of the feeling that, you know, that Jesse was kind of blowing him off.
Yeah.
And then when he saw Tulip, he got distracted, and of course he turned back to Miles. Miles is gone.
Totally. He doesn't have time for everybody else's problems.
No.
Anymore.
No. He's focused on the mission, not on the people.
Yep.
So I thought that was pretty telling. Sign of where Jesse's head is. Jesse's head is in Jesse.
But with Miles, though, like, why... Okay, so there's this struggle between good and evil inside of him, too. What do you think he's thinking about? Like, why would he want to cover for Quinn Cannon?
No, I think he's trying to... He's looking at where his, you know, where to put his tent.
Yeah.
You know?
His allegiance.
Yeah, and he's looking at Quinn Cannon as being the closest one, so I guess he figures if I help Quinn Cannon, then he'll be loyal to me too.
Well, Quinn Cannon is the town.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what I was going
to
say.
So, I mean, he's trying to protect him. I mean, that's, which is why Quinn Cannon says it in the first place, you know, that he could kill whoever he wants and it just gets covered up.
Yeah.
Right.
And he does whatever he wants because he owns the town.
Right.
So
basically, if Quinn Cannon goes down, the whole town goes down.
Right.
Because everybody will lose their job.
So you... Let me ask you this. Do you think Sheriff Rootnaw helped him?
I don't know.
With the burned up car thing?
Yeah, yeah. I'm starting to think maybe he did. You know, at first I didn't think that. I was thinking, you know, that Miles did. But you know what? That was a pretty heavy duty job.
Yeah.
And like Quinn Cannon said, he said, I could do anything in here and it would be covered up.
Yeah.
So maybe Root did help him.
Maybe so.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably.
I think at the end you see the car that is burned up, which is obviously a fake.
And Root's there.
Oh, was he there? I didn't know that he
was
there.
Yeah. He and one of his deputies are standing there next to the car.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah. I forgot about that part. But yeah, so obviously, yeah, I mean, it was kind of a fake out for us because we're thinking that it was, you know, Eugene that just got sent to hell. And then we see these burned up bodies.
Right.
But yeah, they're covering up for what happened to all the Green Acres folks.
Yeah. And don't forget, guys, we just skipped right over the fact that Eugene was sent to hell.
Well,
Didn't skip over it.
No, we're still talking about...
That was important.
We're still talking about Miles's motivation here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nailed it.
But I don't think that... I don't think it's unreasonable to think that Sheriff Root is on the take. And that's probably why he was talking about swamp monsters in that last episode. Or that one episode. Because he knows that everything is just going to hell, basically.
Yeah. Right, right. And we've already seen a scene with Quinn Cannon talking, you know, when he was at the site of the girl that fell into the marsh pit.
Exactly. He didn't do anything.
Know, yeah, Quinn Cannon stops talking, and then you look over at Root, and he's like, okay, everybody, let's break it up.
Yeah.
So he's definitely deep in that guy's pocket. So.
Well, I mean, the whole town is morally to shit, and then you've got this preacher that is... you know, coming of age, who is himself an evil guy at heart. Yeah. But, I mean, well, not at heart, I guess.
Not
his
evil,
ex-
but bad.
Or he has been.
Yeah, he has been an evil guy for many years.
Well,
but
he has a past, just like the town.
Yeah, but, right. But his teaching has all been from his dad, who is more pure.
Right.
So
He's got a lot of dead Indians hanging inside of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
A lot of scalps piled up.
So, yeah, I'm interested to see where all that goes. But, yeah, I mean, the crazy thing was that, I mean, like Scott had brought before, or maybe Scott or Kim had brought up before that, well, you know, maybe he's understanding that his power is getting out of hand, but yet, you know,
he doesn't care.
No, he doesn't care. Then he sends Eugene. He's like, why don't you go to hell? Which that scene was crazy because I was wondering why is Eugene standing up to him so much during this?
Well,
this scene?
You know what? I tell you what, you know, again, I get back to. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, he was, to set it up, he was pissed. Well, Eugene was saying that he wanted him to take back the forgiveness because he said it was cheating. Mm-hmm. And the preacher said, well, that's my job is to, bring people together or something of that effect. And yet, Eugene's like, no, this is, you know, sinful. It's evil. Because, I mean, you know, Eugene is, I mean, he is pure.
Right. And Jesse's offended because he thinks that Eugene is saying that his powers and his mission are cheating.
Right. And he's, Jesse's offended because he's like, I just gave you this gift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just took this away.
How do you look at me as being a problem?
Right, but
I'm the one who's here to save everybody.
Yeah, I think part of it's important because you're seeing that Eugene he's miffed by the fact that all these people are they're accepting him now.
You do gotta agree with Jesse at one point when he says, "Eugene, you are a hard boy to
please." Yeah, right. No, yeah, that was a good line. That's very true. That was a good line. But yeah, because obviously Eugene does not forgive himself, so he's like, "Why do these people forgive me?"
Right. Right.
So, and then Jesse's finally, like, he just has enough and says, go to hell.
Go to hell, Eugene. And then he turns around and...
But see, this is where I think that Jesse is actually struggling with what he's been doing by telling people things. Mm-hmm. Because in a previous scene, he'd already asked Tulip, you know, am I doing okay? Is what I'm doing all right? Am I right in what I'm doing?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, yeah, it's good. It's fine.
Yeah, well, he's talking to Emily about it.
Oh, Emily, that's right.
Right, yeah.
And so the fact that he's asking her and then all this stuff that's coming up with Eugene, it's like, well, God damn it. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm trying to give you people what you want, and it's not good enough. But then again, he's like, and what am I doing? Is that really good, or am I screwing up?
Well, yeah, but, you know, it even showed, you know, if you look at the previous scenes for the next episode... I don't understand why Jesse couldn't have just turned around and said, Eugene, come back. Instead, he's kind of covering it up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he didn't seem like he was that upset.
Oh, I thought he was.
No.
Really? I thought he was kind of shocked. He was kind of like, oh, shit.
No, I don't think he didn't seem to me like he was that upset that it happened, which I thought was kind of shocking.
I think he was surprised, but it didn't, you know, it was just a glint of, you know, oh, okay.
Because didn't he turn around and just, like, walk off or something?
Yeah,
he turned around and walked on,
I don't know. He definitely, in the next episode, initially doesn't do anything to bring him back, which I was kind of surprised about. I would think he'd be all over that.
But I'm sure we'll see him again.
Yeah, which now I'm surprised. Because I'm like, actually have some connection with Eugene. Because at first I could not figure out why we kept seeing Eugene so much.
Yeah. And again, you know, Stu, I was talking about before about the actor with his eyes and that thing.
Yeah.
Man, when he was going after Jesse, his eyes were no longer timid.
Yeah, I know. And
he was fierce.
Yeah, he was into it, completely into it. And that's where I was surprised at how much he, and I think what I was saying was he was standing up to him so much that he was like, he was pissed that Jesse would not take it back.
And I understood where Jesse was coming from in some respects, you know, like, what the hell do you want, kid? You ask for one thing, you want this, you want that, you want this.
Ungrateful bastard.
Yeah. I want a cheeseburger, I want a hamburger, I want a hot dog. That was a shocker. And then I think at that point we go to the final scene, right?
Yep. Burned bodies.
Yeah, and then, I mean, yeah, so we kind of, that's what I was saying. I was, you know, we lead to him going to hell, and all of a sudden we see burned bodies, but it's the burned bodies of the Green Acres people.
Yep, that Miles set up.
Yep.
And he's on the phone calling the Green Acres people and making up excuses about why he didn't get their messages.
Yeah, and then Quinn Cannon showed up and started peeing on the bodies. And I was like,
No, it's next time.
So you guys need a cool down.
There's a little splash of life.
And you know it's been at least 24 hours, so they had to store the bodies somewhere.
No one's going to say nothing.
Yeah, did you notice his face, too? I mean, he's smiling the whole time. And he's not, he doesn't at one point in the conversation sound like anything's wrong.
Yeah.
He's just kind of like, yeah, you know, I'm sorry I hadn't gotten back to you. And, you know, the sheriff's department, they said they would do this. But I felt, you know, be in contact with me, it would probably be my job to call you about this. You know.
Yeah, it sounds like the shithead professional phone call that is delivering bad news, you know.
Right. It's like watching the news with Dan Rather.
Yeah. It's, you know, you guys, I hate to say, but the bodies are burned up.
You had me installing this thing at your house and the whole house burned down. You know, what can I say?
Exactly. I can tell you about the plane crash with the gleam in his eye.
Yeah. It's all about the delivery.
So this will definitely come back to haunt Miles.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it will.
And hopefully Quinn Cannon. Maybe.
Well, you know, I mean, what the weird thing is in...
Quinn Cannon?
Yes, Otis.
Otis. And Cooter.
Cooter.
Cooter. Cooter. That's Quinn way to burn Cannon. Those bodies, Cooter.
Yeah. We keep him locked up in the basement.
Damn. Are you using your monster voice again?
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, that's your sundowner. So what's going to happen in the next one?
That's exactly right. I mean, what do you guys think? What are we looking at for the next episode?
Well.
Yes. Samples.
I know Sheriff Root's going to be peeping around wondering where his son is.
True. Exactly.
That's a good point. I hadn't actually even thought about that.
And he looks kind of sad on the preview.
Or maybe not, because Sheriff Root's such a dick. Yep. He may not even care.
Well, like, just be... we've actually seen it on the preview, Ross, so...
well, I haven't. Obviously.
But wasn't it the previous episode, didn't he blow out Eugene, though?
No, he blew up at him.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
He didn't blow him out of his... Yeah.
He blew him out of his presence.
I don't want to know how you blow out anybody.
Wow, this is gone sideways.
But no, Sheriff Root, he does start looking around, but he does look sad. Like, he's really concerned. Uh-huh. And I think he is concerned about his boy.
Sure, of course he is. I mean, he may have blown up at Adam, but I think it was out of frustration more than anything. It's not that he doesn't love Eugene.
Right.
I think he's very frustrated with the whole situation about Eugene, and frankly, he's just a jerk.
Yeah.
But I do think he loves the kid.
Yeah, totally. What's the next episode called?
It's called, let's see here, it's called He Gone.
He Gone. Whoop.
He Gone. There's no description available, but I think we're talking about Eugene if we're talking about he.
Uh-huh.
And oh, that's true. The ramifications of Eugene disappearing. That would be my guess as to what our description will be for the next episode.
That's true.
Yeah. And the preview showed that Jesse was totally lying about where Eugene is, because Sheriff Root asked him, well, have you seen him? And he's like, nope, I haven't seen him in a while.
That's right. He's covering his ass. So that doesn't say a whole lot of complimentary things about our buddy Jesse.
No, no. Well, I'm wondering if we'll see Cassidy confront Tulip a little bit more.
I don't know. I think Cassidy may just kind of back off. He had that look in his face like, I'm not going to win this one.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, he kind of sees. He sees there's a boundary that he doesn't need to get past.
Uh-huh.
So I think that'll play out that way. I hope that's the way it play off.
Or he's kind of a wild card. Who knows?
He is a wild card.
He could jump
wild
in there.
Wild card!
Yeah, he could jump in there and be like, yeah, screw. Jesse doesn't care.
Exactly. I'm better than Jesse. I'll just rip his throat out and take Tulip.
Yeah.
But...
Well... Are there any other points about this episode that you guys wanted to talk about?
No. I think we covered
awesome
everything pretty well.
We've exhausted it.
We have exhausted it, and I hope we haven't exhausted our listeners.
No.
No, of course not.
No.
Because they are awesome.
Do you, Kim, do you have any news points to tell us about today?
I do. The biggest one is that Preacher has been picked up for a second season. Woo-hoo!
Yeah, that is huge.
Yep.
So very nice. Everybody loves Preacher.
I think the other side of that is that now that Game of Thrones is done.
Yep.
And there are a lot of people jumping on watching this show. And I think there's a lot of people catching up on it too. I mean, at least, yeah, I don't think we're going to go into too much of the Twitter stuff this time. But a lot of the action that I've seen on Twitter is just like all these people started following us, started following Preacher. That, you know, there's a whole nother audience that's you know, come into seeing, you know, what this show actually is.
Mm-hmm. That's been freed up by that Game of Thrones bullshit.
Everybody was. I mean, Game of Thrones is awesome. I mean, it's incredible show. It really is. But there's a lot of people that, like, you know, they want more content. And so now they're like they're finally getting a chance to see Preacher. So,
right.
No, it's actually, I think there's going to be a huge audience for it, for sure.
Didn't we hit a threshold of some importance at some point recently?
Oh, yeah. We had over 10,000 downloads.
For the first time.
Oh, yes! Right.
So, yeah, we hit 10,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After just 38 episodes, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I think it peaked. I shouldn't say it peaked. It rose a lot at the end of the Walking Dead episode, so when Negan came out. But you know what? It didn't really peter off. It kept going. So thanks for everybody listening out there.
Yeah,
and for
we
downloading.
Really appreciate it. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to see that people are still, they're still listening.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we're getting more and more feedback from listeners through Twitter and over email and on Facebook. Our next piece of news is that the Comic-Con panel has been announced for all of our shows. So that's The Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead, and Preacher. Okay? So Comic-Con in San Diego happens at the end of July, and all of these panels happen on Friday, July 22nd. So anybody who's in the area and attending Comic-Con, you better sit your butt down in one of those chairs and not move the entire day, because you'll never get back in.
And if you will let us know that you're going, we'll send you a whole bunch of our cards of our podcast, mm-hmm. and you can hand them out.
Exactly. That would be awesome.
And we'll send you our one of our sleeveless t-shirts that Ross is sporting right now.
We'll put it up on the website.
The Arseface t-shirt. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
So the
looking good.
So the Fear of the Walking Dead panel is going to be the first one, and that's going to happen at 12 noon, and it's going to have all of the major cast members: Kim Dickens, Cliff Curtis, Alicia Debnam Carey, Frank Delane, Lorenzo James Henry, Mercedes Mason, Coleman Domingo, and Danae Garcia, who is a new actor, a new cast uh-huh. member. And then David Erickson, the showrunner and producer, and then also Robert Kirkman, Gail Ann Hurd, Greg Nicotero, and Dave Albert are going to be on there.
Nice.
And then there's going to be an autograph session on the next day, July 23rd. And they're also going to have a replica of the yacht.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Huh.
So it's going to be parked wow. at the Fifth Avenue Pier behind the San Diego Convention Center. And you can go on the yacht and like tour around and all that stuff. It's going to be called the Abigail Experience. So
That's cool. I know exactly where that is, too. That's very yeah. cool. That would be fun.
And then the Walking Dead panel happens immediately after the Fear of the Walking Dead panel at 1 o'clock. And it's going to be Andrew Lincoln, Norman Reedus, Stephen Yeun, Lauren Cohen, Danai Gurira, Chandler Riggs, Michael Cudlitz, Sonequa Martin-Green, Christian Serratos, Ross Marquand, and Josh McDermott, which, as you know, that's the entire lineup of the people in front of Negan.
Right.
Mm.
They're not leaving anybody out.
But the order you just announced them in.
What could that mean?
And then Scott Gimple is going to be there, as well as Kirkman. He's going to be doing that panel again. And then Gail Ann Hurd and Greg Nicotero and David Albert. And then both of those panels are going to be moderated by Chris Hardwick. Mm-hmm. And then after The Walking Dead, their autograph session is going to be on Friday at 2:30.
Okay.
So that'd be cool. And then everybody has a chance to get their photo taken with the entire lineup of Negan's crew. So exciting.
How much is that going to cost?
I would die if I was there. Probably like $300 or $600.
Exactly. Jesus.
The Preacher panel is going to be Friday at 6:30, and that's going to be moderated by Kevin Smith. And that's going to be Dominic Cooper, Ruth Naga, Joseph Gilgan, Ian Colletti, and Graham McTavish, and Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, and Garth Ennis, who created the comic book.
Cool. Good.
Yep, and they're actually going to be doing a two-hour panel because they're going to be doing a live reading of the script. So that'd be cool.
Wow.
Yes.
Very cool.
Yes. So that's exciting. I wish I could be there.
Yeah.
When is this again? What are the dates?
Friday, July 22nd.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, Scott, you heading out there?
Yep.
Okay, sweet. So we got our on-site person.
I'll do the remote.
Okay, sweet.
Last year, Walker Stalker did an event, a fan fest event, but I don't think they're going to do it this year because it was totally insane last year.
Yeah.
Do you think they'll bring any of those guys or the Preacher people to the Walker Charlotte
Stalker? I would.
Walker Stalker in December?
Nobody's been announced, but it doesn't mean they won't.
Okay.
I hope so.
It would be cool since they're an AMC show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
And we could possibly get Ross down there.
Possibly.
But more than likely, if anybody would show up, it would be the Atlanta show.
The man on the street.
That's right.
So look for them for the Atlanta show. But then also in LA news, the Walking Dead Experience.
Yes.
Universal Studios has opened up their walkthrough.
Oh, yeah. I saw photos of that.
Yep.
It looks insane.
It looks really cool, actually. I was impressed.
Yeah. And it's headed up by Nicotero, so, like, the makeup is, like, legit. And it looks awesome. And what's that lady's name that's always on The Talking Dead? The fan?
The black girl?
Yeah.
What's her name? Yes, I know who you're talking about.
I can't remember her name. Anyways, she was at the live opening event. And she
was on that show, Community?
Yes.
Like Miss Precious or something like that? Or
yeah.
Not Miss Precious. I can't remember her name. Anyways, she walked through, and when she came out, she was like shaking.
Mm.
So I think it'll be good. And Stuart and I are going to Universal Orlando.
Uh-oh.
In October. So I'm hoping by then they'll have the Orlando one open.
Very nice.
It'll be awesome.
Yeah, scare the shit out of your kids. Perfect.
No, they're not going. Yeah, this is for Halloween Horror Nights. They can't go. So
you draw the line there. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Only the youngest will go.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone under 18 is allowed in. Because it's super creepy.
Sure, you can't sneak them in there with that hair.
No.
We'll put them on stilts.
Ah, cool.
This would be
so like
Art little... Garfunkel.
He is Kellar.
Kellar.
The last little bit of news is that Walker Stalker Con and Heroes and Villains Fan Fest are going to merge for a one-day charity event in Orlando on September 17th to benefit the victims of the Orlando Pulse nightclub shootings, because nice. James Frazier, who started the entire Walker Stalker Con and Heroes and Villains Fan Fest conglomerate, he's originally from Orlando and went to high school there and all that stuff, so he wanted to do something to benefit everyone who was affected by that event. So he's going to be holding a one-day event, and all proceeds will go towards the victims of Very the nice. Shootings. And it will feature stars from The Walking Dead and Arrow, like Stephen Amell.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to be announcing more stars as they get closer. Tickets start at $55. So it's kind of pricey, but...
That's not bad.
It's going to be all the major stars from The Walking Dead, so yeah. That's cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely. That's it.
What the hell was that?
Sorry, that's me.
You doing some sanding there?
You bringing down the attic stairs? All
right. I get some light remodeling done during the podcast.
So is that all the news that's fit to print?
That's all we got, buddy.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Nice job.
Thanks.
Nice job.
Thanks.
We got anything else?
I think that's it.
Oh, baby. You know what that means.
Time to wrap it up.
Time to wrap it up.
Yeah. So thank you to everyone for listening to another episode of the Fear Me podcast. And thank you to Ross for joining us once again, especially back-to-back weeks.
Thanks, Ross.
Thanks for having me.
You're awesome. And thanks to Scott for coming back from Ireland.
Yeah. Sound like we almost lost him there.
I was worried Ross would do so damn well you wouldn't want me back.
All right, well, we need to talk after the podcast, Scott.
Shit.
Anyway, we're just giving you time to sober up, that's all.
Ah, yeah. Feck it.
Back to your sign-off, Kim.
Yeah. So, you can find us, if you want to, on Twitter, SoundCloud, Google Play, and iTunes. And you can also find us on Facebook and on the web at www.fearmepodcast.com. And if you want to get in touch with us or send us your thoughts on our episodes, you can email us at fearmepodcast@gmail.com. So we'll be back next week to review episode 6 of Preacher. And we've only got three more weeks of Preacher.
Oh, is that right? Oh, wow.
It ends July 31st.
That's right.
Shit.
Yeah. Then we have a month break, and then Fear comes back August 21st. So.
All right. Sounds good.
Yep.
Feckin' assholes. Arseholes.
Arseholes.
Okay. Feck it. All right, you're my brother.
We'll see all of you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Good night.
Good night.
See ya.
Blue party. I'm so excited. Blue party. Just all of me are invited.